Our brother Paul's service this afternoon is entitled, The Miracle Within You. The Miracle Within You. Brother Paul.
The chairman was so nice to say adjust the mic. He forgot to say to adjust the podium because I'm really standing up. It's my privilege to be here with you in the southern part of California. Before we begin, greetings and love from the little class of Groton, Connecticut. They voted to send their love and greetings to you. Also from my daughter Dawn, who called me before we left. She says, be sure, because she says many know me, that I send love and greetings too. And her husband, Russell. So Russell and Dawn Shilu also send their love and greetings. There's something exciting happening to you. And if I achieve anything this afternoon, I'm going to try to arouse you to that excitement. Something spectacular. Something mind-boggling. It's the greatest miracle of all time. We don't usually see it as the greatest because we're in it. It's a miracle. Why? Because it's not natural. A miracle is happening outside the laws of nature. A miracle is an occurrence that is astonishing, amazing, extraordinary, inexplainable. A miracle is a phenomena that is executed by God Himself. What is this miracle? It is the miracle of transformation. You are being changed from humans to divine. Now, we say it in a few words. Let me repeat it. You are being changed from human to divine. But do you get the import of that? It's not something that happens every day. It's not even something that happens once a year. It probably will never happen again in your lifetime, in my lifetime. It may never happen again in eternity. I say may not. I don't know what God has in mind. But I do know that it's an opportunity right now. Don't lose the opportunity. Give all you got. It's not like going to the supermarket, picking up a bottle of milk. Transformation to the divine nature is a powerful idea. You can lose it. The miracle of transformation to a divine being is greater than the lame man leaping with new legs. It's greater than the blind man seeing with new eyes. It's greater than the diseases that people have and that were cleansed. It is greater than all of the Lazarus. I think we'll agree that Lazarus coming back to life was probably one of the biggest of the miracles that Jesus died. But Lazarus died. You see him around somewhere? He died. It was a miracle to come back. But he's gone. The transformation miracle may very well be the greatest miracle that God has ever made. Wow. What a statement to make. Let me see if I could explain why. When God created the universe, it was a positive substance. When God created the angels, it was a positive substance. When God created the earth, it was a positive substance. When God selected us, we came from the negative. I don't know about you, but I came from the negative, the sinful, the degenerate. So what God has done is taken a negative thing, moved it up to a point of neutrality, and then ascendancy up is the prospect for the divine nature. I like the word recreate. And I use that as a synonym for transformation. God is recreating you. You are being changed. You are developing a new nature, the divine nature. He is recreating us. Recreation is a good synonym for transformation. What we're saying is, you will be in throughout eternity known as those individuals who not only nothing, and you know, we have a hymn that we sing, oh, to be nothing, but oh, to be negative. You know, in terms of negatives and positive, you have to come up to a neutral point, negative to neutral, and then from that point on to positive. We will be known as the negatives that God moved into the positives. Of course, we can always come back and quickly say that the Logos was really the biggest miracle of all time. I think that has a lot of truth to it. But the Logos was perfect, you see. But I think we could say that. And we're living in the days of recreating. We are being reshaped. We are being renaturalized. Our nature is being changed. Paul Malley, who was born not only nothing but negative, is being changed. He's being reshaped. So are you. And we're rising up, ascending, and we're being retranslated and renatured until our resurrection change is complete, until we are born. We are given the glorious nature of God Himself. Can we really believe that? Oh, that's so hard to believe. Is it easy to believe that we will have the very nature of God Himself? That's a very difficult thing to understand, but we have faith and we believe it. But can we hold that prospect in our minds? Immortality. Can we really say that we will one day, if we're faithful, be immortal? Wow. The energy of immortality. You know, every time I think of immortality, I think of the energy of stars and whatnot. Abundant energy. You know, if you're immortal, you don't have to sleep. You're awake for 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. You don't have to sleep, because why do we sleep? Why do you go to sleep? Of course, you say, well, because it feels good. Yes, it does. Or you might say, oh, because I'm tired. Yes, that gets closer to it. But even closer, you go to sleep because you ran out of energy. And we could make a big point about running out of energy and being as faithful as we should be, because energy is such an important part of the equation. But immortal people don't have to worry about running out of energy. They are immortal. Another thing, travel with the speed of thought. How fast does thought travel? Well, we heard Andy pray a moment ago. And the first words, if I remember it, is, Our Father which art in heaven. Wow, just that expression, Our Father which art in heaven, went 500 million billion light years away. If you believe that God is way out beyond our universe, which I do. And he just said, Our Father, but not just him, but every time we say, Our Father which art in heaven, you understand you enter the spiritual world. You're no longer human and no longer on earthly matters. when you say, "Our Father which art in heaven," you have entered the spiritual world, because thought goes that fast. Remember Daniel when he was praying? The angel appeared right after the prayer. He says, "Daniel, your prayer was answered." Wow. That fast? You know, Einstein says nothing can ever go faster than 186,000 miles per second. We're going to see him wrong, proven wrong. There are two scientists right now that are working on the speed of energy, because Einstein says matter, when they reach 186,000 miles per second, gets converted or transformed into energy. But these scientists have said energy has velocity that is even greater than that. Hasn't proven it yet, but I believe the speed of thought is faster. And I might say, as I think about it, thought is the closest thing we can say about the spiritual world. If we as humans want to appreciate what the spiritual world is, think about thought. Thought can go through walls. Thought can go 500 million billions light years away. Thought, that's the closest we can get to what the spiritual world is all about. And we enter it every time we say, "Our Father, which art in heaven." Paul gives us a rather interesting scripture in 1 Corinthians 2:14. "The natural man receiveth not the things of the Spirit of God, for they are foolishness unto him. Neither can he know them, because they are spiritually discerned." The miracle of transformation is that God is recreating humans, us, that have been spiritually begotten into divine beings. There's some controversy as to when will he do this? When will we get the divine nature? Some say we will get it when we see and meet God. Maybe some of you feel that way. When we see and meet God, we will get the divine nature. Others say when the bridegroom meets his bride at the marriage, we will get the divine nature. Still others say at the resurrection. Oh, this is appealing to me from the standpoint that natures are fixed. Natures are fixed. There is the human nature, there is the spiritual nature, and there is the divine nature, and they're all fixed and they're separate. But I'll give you my view when divine nature starts. It starts now. It starts at begettal. If you note in baptism and consecration, and we've had much thoughts on baptism, you will note that the human nature is reckoned dead. Those two sisters, when they were baptized, they were told, "You are alive in the spirit," in embryo form, but you were alive in the spirit. You are dead as a human. So we are reckoned dead in the eyes of God. So what I'm saying is divine nature starts not in power, not in energy, not in body, but in nature. And how is that done? By living divine principles. If you live divine principles, you are gradually being changed from human to divine. Let me give you an example of principles, how principles can reshape us. And since we have already suggested to you, the divine nature doesn't start way in the future. It's starting now. Let me give you an example. When you love your neighbor, this is a human principle, loving your neighbor. And incidentally, loving your neighbor is not found in the New Testament, alone in the New Testament. Loving your neighbor is found in the Old Testament. The second is when you give hospitality to a stranger, that's another principle. This is a spiritual principle. But when you love your enemies, that's a divine principle. You see the difference between the three? The first is love your neighbor. The second is love a stranger. The third is love an enemy. That's divine. And why do we make a big fuss over it? Because if we're going to have the nature of God, divine nature, we must then live the principles of God. You know, if I had to say something that I don't want you to forget, it's this point. Live divine principles and you're on your way to a divine nature. But if you live other principles, good as they are, and they are good, live good human principles, you'll become a human. Live good spiritual principles, you'll be I can even equate that. Human principles will put you in the human class. Spiritual principles will put you in the great company class. Divine principles will put you into the little flock. Let me give you a story, which I do every once in a while, about the dog who wanted to be a human being. I'm sure some of you heard about it. It's a parable. There was a dog who was very unhappy with the dog's life, and he went around observing something about human beings. And he said, you know, these human beings are pretty good. They eat good. They seem to have a lot of fun. They talk to one another. They travel. You know, the dog says, I want to be a human being. So he thought he'd inquire. Hey, how does one become a human being? And one of the old dogs said, go down to the field. At the end of the field, you'll see the great one there. And ask him. So he went down there. And there was the great one. Oh, great one, I would like to be a human being. How can I become one? And the great one said, oh, yes, it can be done. But it takes time. He said, oh, no, I don't want to wait. I want it right away. It takes time. Again, the dog says, no, I want it not only right away, I want it now. So the great one says, okay, close your eyes. And the dog took on a human form. Wow, that's weird. Just like that. And the dog saw he was in human form. He was happy. He left. He didn't even thank the great one, by the way. He went out, and as he went, he saw human beings over there. He says, I think I'll engage in conversation. As he went to the human beings, he opened his mouth and he was barking like a dog. That's a weird phenomenon. Can you imagine a human body barking like a dog? So all of a sudden he began to get that propensity to want to go on all fours. And that's what he did. He fell on all fours and he started running like a dog. And he went to the other dogs that were there. And as he was barking, they says, there's our friend barking. Look, he's coming to us. Wait a minute, he's got a human body. That's weird, too. So he was repelled by humans, and he was repelled by the dogs because he didn't quite make that transformation. So he went back to the field again, to the mighty one, and says, oh, mighty one, this is not what I wanted. And the mighty one says, I didn't think so. I really want to become a human being. So the mighty one said to him, pretend you are dead to the dog's world, but alive in the human world. Keep pretending. Change your mind. Transform your mind. Now, friends, we're not talking about dogs into humans. We're talking about humans into divine beings. You got to change. You can't become divine the way you are. You've got to be living those divine principles so God can put you in a divine body. Let me make this point. Transformation takes time. It cannot happen in haste. We are being recreated. Pretend you are dead to the human world. And that's what consecration, don't we say? Dead to the human world. But alive to the spiritual world. Keep pretending. Keep changing the brain and live in the spiritual world. One day you will become spiritual. The brain must be changed before the body. You can't change the body first and then the brain later. Can you imagine putting our brain in a brand new divine body? Don't imagine it. It can't happen. God cannot put an imperfect brain, an imperfect mind, into a perfect divine body. So keep living those divine principles. Eventually, you will be in that nature. And then later on, you will get the power. And later on, you will get the energy. And later on, you will be getting the body of a divine nature. What is different about this miracle from any other miracle is that we have the privilege to help God in this enormous task. Going to meetings on Sunday morning or sitting in a convention like you are right now, in no way will make you a divine being. No different than sitting in a chicken coop will make you a chicken. We're talking about transformation. We are privileged to join in with God to help with that transformation. You can't say, "Here I am, God. How about changing me?" Well, he says, "I will. But I've got to have you too help out," you see. So divine transformation is moving out of flesh and bones into a divine spiritual world. Divine transformation is moving out from earth to the heavens. Divine transformation is moving out of an imperfect self to a perfect self. Divine transformation moves out of your genetic package. Ah, I'm glad I hit that point. You are really changing the very genetic package that your parents gave you. Your parents gave you not only a genetic, but it was human. We are now being changed into a genetic package that God has given us, which is spiritual. Flesh gives birth to flesh, but God's Spirit gives birth to the Spirit. Spirituality is a wonderful term. I love it. Spirituality is defined as closeness to God. Why is it? Because He is a Spirit. And the closer you are, the more that influence of the Spirit comes into your life. Spirituality starts in the inner mind. But how does it start? With the seed of God to a new life. This is supported by scriptures like in John 15:16. You have not chosen me, I have chosen you. Like in John 6:44. No man cometh to the Father unless the Father first draws him. And also from James 1:18, He begat us with the word of truth. Interesting research going on here in San Diego. I'm convinced those scientists have discovered something important. You know, they've been doing work on the brain. They've been researching different parts of the brain, which covers different functions of behavior. And they found a spot that when it's stimulated, a person becomes very spiritual. A spot which when either chemically stimulated or electrically stimulated, people begin to become very spiritual. That, you know where that spot is, friends? Right here. In the forehead. And so they called it the God spot. Why? Because they have atheists. Atheists that went through the tests and measurements, because it's a helmet that comes through with magnetic probes and sensors. And it stimulates the individual into spirituality. Well, you know, there's the scriptures that connects with that forehead. Let me give you a few of them. Revelation 7, 1 to 3, remember? Hold back the four winds until we seal them in the forehead. And then in Revelation 2, 14, Revelation 13, 16, Revelation 9, 4, Ezekiel 9, 4, the scriptures seem to indicate that there's something about the forehead. These scientists have said that is the part of the limbic system of the frontal lobe. There is the rear lobe, and there is the temporal lobe, but this is the frontal lobe. I'd like to think that's where the new creature is. Where do you think the new creature is? Is it in your kidney? Is it in your liver? And you might say in your heart. Well, from a technical standpoint, the heart is only a pump. That's all it is. I'd like to think the new creature is right there. Right in the forehead. And therefore, these scientists have now uncovered the spirituality of a person can start right there. You know, the number of atheists, and I was fascinated with their tests and their research with the atheists. And we have found out that the atheists, there's roughly 4% in the world are atheists. Well, does that mean 96% are believers in God? No, it doesn't mean that, because we have another group called the agnostics. The agnostics are the ones who say, prove to me that there is a God. Prove it. And the biggest proof that they want is the visibility. Show me. Give me his visibility. Well, it's rather interesting. You can't get a number on that agnostics, but the invisibility is a big problem with faithless people. We have no problem with invisible phenomena in the spiritual world because our faith carries us through it. But people who don't have that faith, they have a big problem with it. On the other hand, they're contradictory, because if you ask them to prove gravity, or ask them first, do you believe in gravity? And they'll say, yes, we believe in gravity. Then you ask the second question, can you prove it? Can you prove gravity? I doubt it. Yet, these scientists will believe in gravity. How can you sit in the chair still be held there without knowing why? Again, the invisible force. How come the earth stays in its orbit as it goes around the sun? Again, gravity. Ask them to explain how the cell phone can speak from New York to somewhere in Egypt, Cairo, Egypt, with no wires between them. Ask them to prove the invisible magnetic flux that gives magnetic north a different course than the cosmic or celestial north. God is invisible. Why shouldn't we believe invisible things or phenomena like gravity, like electronic transmission, and like magnetism? Let me give you a rather interesting thing. If you are not changing yourself into the divine nature, if you are not living those principles, the world will change you to its model. I see the chairman putting on his coat. Let me give you a rather interesting story. It's a true story. A man by the name of Leonardo da Vinci. He was given the charge to paint the Last Supper. You remember that? The Last Supper. How many people around that table? 13? 12 apostles and our Lord, right? Well, this Italian artist, famous as he is, took 7 years. Now, this is a fact now. This is a true story. Took 7 years to paint that Last Supper. What he did was interview people. He wanted to get the faces of people to be characterized by each one. Thomas and John and Judas and Jesus. I think it took him 2 years, according to the record, 2 years to find the face of Jesus and to paint that face, which he did. But it took him, I think, 4 years to paint Judas. He couldn't find that criminal face. And what he did was he got permission from the civil authorities to pull out an individual that he thought looked like Judas. Incidentally, I want you to know, when you see that painting again, the second person from the right, the second person is a face that's interesting. It's his face. He put his face in the Last Supper. True story. But he had a tough time with Judas. He couldn't seem to find that face, that traitorous face, criminal face, and so forth. But he finally found one and painted it in and proceeded to do that. When he was all through, the man came to him and said, "Mr. Da Vinci, don't you remember me?" He says, "No, I don't remember you. Who are you?" He says, "Well, I was the face of Jesus that you thought was his face." "And what happened here?" He says, "I went through a lot of changes, and I am no longer that beautiful face." The point I'm trying to make, if you are not deliberately, consciously changing yourself to the divine, with divine principles, to become a divine person, if you're not doing it, the world will do it for you. Television will do it for you. Movies will do it for you. Where you live will do it for you. You know, the tabernacle is a wonderful experience for us. When God designed the tabernacle, he had us in mind as well as the Israelites. The tabernacle shows how to fellowship with God, traveling toward him. This is the whole sum and substance of the meaning of the tabernacle. The tabernacle is a map. After all, when you go on a journey, shouldn't we not have a map? Crystal clear to avoid getting lost. This is the most important fact of the tabernacle. God was there in the most holy, and yet we were traveling toward him in the most holy, but we were also traveling toward the promised land. And so it is with spirituality. We are traveling toward God. We are journeying toward God, as it is going through the court, the holy, and the most holy. But the whole tabernacle is moving toward the promised land, and that's what we are. We are moving toward God. We are adopting his image. We are taking his principles of living and putting it into our principles of living. And while we're doing this, we are moving ourselves toward heaven. Let me conclude. The work of transforming ourselves is really in advance of transforming an imperfect world. The world needs transformation. The world needs reconciliation. The world must be transformed. That's the work of the kingdom. And Lord God is asking us to reconcile people. Now is the time to develop those skills of reconciliation. Now is the time to do it in a practical way, so that one day when we're in the city of God, when we're in that wonderful temple that comes down, the city of God is not heaven. Remember, it comes out of heaven. It descends. I don't know where you would think about it. Remember, 1,200 furlongs, and it's about 1,500 miles. I believe that the city of God will come out of heaven and will be just above the old city of Jerusalem. It'll come down out of heaven. We will be in there. We will be in there. And as it comes down, it will land in Jerusalem. And there will be the city of God. And on the earth will be the patriarchs and the prophets already as leaders to bless the families of the earth. There we will have a chance to deal with this problem of a reconciliation. This is a big problem. Everybody that has been dead and in the graves will come back the same person. They're not changing in the grave. There's no training going on there. There's no education there. They will come back the same way as they went into the graves. And our work will be from the city of God as it comes down right over the city of Jerusalem. The miracle of transformation has started with the spiritually begotten ones. It will then go to Israel. It will then go to the world. And what a privilege it is for us to experience this transformation. Amen.